The Tom Woods Show, episode 1904.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Harry's, the official razor of the Tom Woods Show, is offering listeners their starter set at harrys.com/woods. That's a five-blade razor, a weighted ergonomic handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel blade cover, a $13 value, all for just $3 at harrys.com/woods. Hi everybody, Tom Woods here. I am joined today by my old friend Jeff Shipley, who is a state representative in Iowa, who is pretty notorious, I'll put it that way. I know him from the old Ron Paul days, going all the way back to 2008, and he's been just terrific and solid and outstanding all the way up through 2021. And of course, you can imagine how good and sound he was all through 2020. So I want to catch up with him and see what is going on. So Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, great to be with you today.
I've known you a long time. We were trying to pinpoint exactly how long it's been, but I've seen you at many events. Most recently, by the way, the end of last year, when Young Americans for Liberty had that event in Melbourne, Florida for the, is it called the Hazlitt Coalition? It's the Hazlitt something.
Yes, I believe that's the title they're working on. And that was wonderful that you were able to make that. I think you inspired many people by showing up to that.
It was a great event and it was great to see you. So you've been in the legislature in Iowa for how long?
This is my third legislative session. So I was first elected in 2018.
Okay. See, I just got done reading an article that was written in the middle of 2020 saying, yeah, we're all lined up and ready to take Shipley out this year. Apparently they didn't.
Yeah, apparently not.
Apparently here you are. Okay. You have built up rather a reputation for yourself in Iowa. So there are things you and I can talk about that go beyond the obvious, where the obvious would be COVID and vaccine passports and stuff. And of course, we have to talk about that. But man, you have a way of bringing people together in two different ways. First, the way Ron Paul brought people together, because the ideas that we hold as libertarians do have a kind of cross-ideological appeal. And so sometimes this group will like us, sometimes that group will like us. But you can also bring people together in opposition. And man, there are a lot of people who have come together who don't like Jeff Shipley. Now, why don't they like? They say you're not serious, your tweets are too provocative or whatever. Like, why do you think you have enemies? I mean, most state legislators, people just don't really give much thought to them one way or the other. How come Jeff Shipley is so different?
Ooh, that's a great question. I wasn't expecting something so deep on psychology and identity so right off the bat. I think the kindest
thing
you must deal
with these people a lot. I mean, I would wonder, why are people coming after me so hard? What are you doing to trigger them?
Well, okay, so the word trigger, when someone gets triggered or emotionally bent out of shape, typically there's some sort of traumatic experience within them that I think is the source of the trigger. But then in my estimation, that when something is truthful and when something that is truthful, you know, is in disharmony with maybe a belief that is not truthful, then you get this dissonance that results in an emotional response. I mean, I will admit that sometimes I have a way of being provocative, sometimes deliberately, sometimes spontaneously. And I think that's just what people are not used to. They're expecting people to bow down to the social pressure, to bow down to the bullying. And I think they just don't know how to respond when someone takes a swing back, so to speak.
Why did you run for the state legislature?
I mean, I'm trying to make a long story short. So, you know, we go back to the Ron Paul campaign way back in 2008, 2012 in Iowa, where I did feel Iowa was a crown jewel of the Ron Paul national success. And my legislative district, I remember thinking when I was settling into Southeast Iowa, city of Fairfield, Jefferson County, had historically performed extremely well for Ron Paul for many different reasons, which we don't have to get into. But in 2008, Jefferson County, Iowa was one of two counties that Ron Paul actually won in the 2008 campaign, the other one being Nye County, Nevada, where the federal government dumps its nuclear waste. So right off the bat, that was something that kind of stood out as early as 2008. And then when I'm settling in there and kind of, you know, being involved in my local Republican Party, you kind of ask yourself that, hey, if there's this strong of a Ron Paul liberty-oriented, independent-thinking presence in this community, how would that translate into, say, representation at the State House? And so I began thinking those thoughts early on, because obviously, you know, something that I think is we understand well in politics, that it, you know, the political representative does represent the district in one way or another. Not always, you know, as you might expect, but certainly an urban district is likely to represent or elect one type of person. A rural area will likely elect a different style of person. So there is, I think, political science virtue in exploring how different constituencies, different demographics of people will support different leadership politically. And so I think that's what initially wanted me to get involved, is that in my community, there was a lot of what I would say forward-thinking or liberty-minded or philosophical-thinking people, and I wanted to represent them. I wanted to make sure that their unique voices were being heard in government.
Let's fast forward right to today, and let's get some of the obvious questions out of the way. You were there, that means, throughout 2020. And so no one could have predicted that you were going to have to deal with questions like this. And now your governor in February said all the state-level restrictions are lifted. Their governor did impose some restrictions, but was under tremendous pressure when there was a spike in Iowa to impose more. But it, you know, the spike came, you know, ended, and with no additional restrictions added, as far as I know, and the spike just ended anyway, as it always does. But how would you rate how your governor has done, and what was your voting record along these lines?
Yeah, great question. So I was first asked to take a vote in March of 2020 to essentially shut down or pause the legislative session and basically give some the governor some emergency spending power. And I did vote affirmative on that. And I remember at the time even joking that this is probably going to be a really bad vote that I'll regret. But taking a 99-1 vote on something like an emergency situation, you know, is not necessarily the fight I wanted to take, because I was also walking around the chamber connecting with the more elderly members and kind of saying my goodbyes, because I was assuming that they were going to be dead in a few months. But overall, I think the state of Iowa ranks, and I would hope maybe the top three or top five, depending on which metrics. I know the Wallet Hub score ranks Iowa consistently, and I think the top two or three. For instance, when the governor issued the mask mandate in November, and again, in response to what could be seen as a, you know, a compelling health interest, when you look at hospitalization rates and, you know, when they're going up, you know, obviously there was a lot more fear and anxiety, but she issued the mandate in a way which was essentially unenforceable, and even commented such that, you know, that she didn't want to devote a lot of public resources or, you know, state patrol or law enforcement trying to police masking issues. So even that, while I remember being extraordinarily disappointed because we had just won the election and then the governor had to issue this mask mandate, but reading through it, I kind of just chuckled at myself because the thing is virtually unenforceable. So yeah, I think Iowa overall has done pretty good. Obviously, there's tremendous room for improvement. But when I look at Minneapolis or my parents and family over in Illinois, I'm certainly very thankful that, you know, I'm on this side of the Mississippi and living in Iowa.
How about this vaccine passport bill? Now, I think I heard, now I don't live there, I don't follow it closely, but my understanding is that this bill basically says that if you're a business that engages in you know, what would seem like a vaccine passport situation where you're demanding proof of vaccination for access, that you would be ineligible for state contracts. And some people have said that that seems a little bit timid and weak. Well, what's your opinion?
Yes, I do think that is a little bit timid and weak. I mean, as a legislator, I would prefer these issues to be just directly addressed in the Civil Rights Code. I do believe in the concept of civil rights. I think there are applications there that if we're coming together as a society, as a civilization, we need to have some basic ground rules on, you know, what's the basic level of respect and dignity we afford our fellow humans in society. So if I wanted to fix it and I had legislation to address this, it unfortunately didn't receive a hearing, but I think it would be addressed in the Civil Rights Code or even, you know, even restating some medical freedom, Fourth Amendment style language, just basically that the people are secure in their medical records. So, sorry, I'm getting trailing off because I forgot the question. But yes, the bill that was passed in Iowa was, I thought, very narrowly tailored with very timid teeth. Now, and this was, I guess, the big argument that erupted in the Capitol was, did this bill actually represent a step in the right direction, even though it was a modest step, or could it potentially be viewed as a step backward in the much larger battle for medical freedom?
So did you support it because you felt like at least it did something?
No, I was vocally opposed to the bill from a few hours after I read it. It was introduced on Friday. I didn't have a chance to review it until Saturday. But after I read through the bill, thought about it, talked to some people, I was vocally against it on our caucus conference call the following night.
Okay. How would you describe your, let's say, your style, if you had to? Because you're not like other state legislators. There aren't that many state legislators in the country, apart from Anthony Sabatini in Florida, whom I just talked to, who, let's say, generate a lot of attention, even ire, and also admiration. What are you doing differently from other state legislators? Anything?
Well, so going back to kind of my personal development, I remember there was a time, I did have a little bit of a stand-up comedy background. And even back then, I remember my little mantra to myself was just like, get up in front of people and tell the truth. You don't have to be funny, but you want to be truthful and you want to be authentic and you want to be genuine because people can pick up on that. And oftentimes it's subtle, but we all do it. And that's what people really want is they want someone who's genuine that can establish, you know, a trustworthy rapport. And then I remember, that was like in my head in 2016 in relation to comedy. But then when I was running for office in 2018, I was asked about an education issue, which ended up being a consequential education issue. But at the time, I wasn't too familiar with it. And I was at a public forum and I gave a response. And after I gave that response, I remember that feeling in my stomach is like, hey, that was maybe only about 50% true. And it felt really bad because if I'm taking all this time to run for office, to attend these events, to put my life on hold and spend all this money, like I need to be at a higher caliber of truth. I need to be at least, you know, 80%, 90%, hopefully 100% truthful. And in that moment in time, the answer I gave just failed. You know, like I said, 50% truthful, which would be an F by any rating. And I remember noticing in that moment and then correcting it in the next answer I gave, where it felt a lot better. So, you know, those were kind of emotional things I was going through while running for office. Like, hey, if I'm going to open up my mouth and speak, you know, I better say how I truly feel.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, along those lines, what would you describe as your most unpopular vote?
Unpopular from constituents or unpopular from, I mean, it's
oh,
it's
well, okay. Yeah, no, give me one of it. Like one unpopular, let's say in the press, but also unpopular with the people who put you in there.
So the most right out the gate as a freshman legislator, I voted against additional education spending, what they call state supplemental aid, because I didn't want to give any more public money to public schools because I thought they were doing a bad job and that the money was not the solution, that, you know, we needed to address these other areas of law to improve education rather than just throwing more money at the problem. A part of that was there is a piece of transportation equity, which is meant to, for school districts that cover larger geographic regions, they have more expenses busing their kids to school. So we had a line item appropriation that was specific to rural school districts with expensive busing. And those were school districts in my district. So one of my very first votes as a legislator was voting against school money for districts in my area where, you know, I get a school board and a superintendent that said, hey, why'd you just vote against this? This equals $400,000 that we really want. And that was pretty intimidating for me off the get-go because I was maybe 3 or 4 weeks into office. And all of a sudden I get, you know, angry people and some hot questions from the press. And, you know, you never have enough time to prepare as much as you'd like because things move quick. But that was a consequential vote I took that kind of set the stage that, hey, this guy is taking a 99-to-1 vote against additional education money that benefits the people in his district. And it was that vote, and it was actually being able to go on the media, do some news interviews, and defend it that earned me the Ron Paul Award for Principled Legislating in the 2019 Hazlitt Coalition. So that was a very distinct vote. Since then, the more recent one is I just voted against a Back the Blue bill based on qualified immunity. And again, going back to what you're saying before, when I was tearing into my Republican colleagues for this qualified immunity provision, I was looking across the chamber. And what really warmed my heart was there was a lot of Democrats smiling. And the fact that I could see their smiles because they had taken off their masks, you know, the week or two prior when the CDC adjusted their guidance. So those are a couple of examples of votes I've taken that are sure to kind of upset the sloganeering, kind of pithy index card of allowable opinion that would obviously we need to tear up and burn. So, yeah.
Yeah, nice, nice, nice. We've mentioned the Hazlitt Coalition a couple of times. That's a group of state legislators from all around the country who have been identified by Young Americans for Liberty and who were, in fact, at that event where I saw you at the end of
2020. And let me just throw in this plug here, because I would not have even run for office if it was not for the Young Americans for Liberty and their Operation Win at the Door program. Because wow. I know to accomplish what I did, which was to unseat a popular incumbent, you know, I knew I was going to need a lot of help and I needed to have friends. And so I attended in 2018 in April, I was invited to a conference in St. Louis where Ron Paul was appearing, and it had been several years since I'd seen Ron Paul, so I wanted to experience that nostalgia. And that was when Young Americans for Liberty was first putting their Operation Win the Door program together, and a lot of great people, you know, a lot of staff, a lot of money, a lot of donors made that happen. And if that wasn't an option, I would not have even have run. Thankfully, you know, the stars were able to align and we pulled off an upset victory by a very slim margin. And Young Americans for Liberty made that possible. So, you know, if you're listening to me and you like my representation, you know, and let's say if you're donating $50 a month to the Mises Caucus, you know, I would definitely encourage you to donate $200 a month to Young Americans for Liberty or Operation Win for the Door or any of these other candidates directly. There's a lot of really exciting things that have evolved from that that I think a lot of people need to pay more attention to, because that's where, you know, the actual consequential races or politics is happening.
They've done some outstanding work on that. There's no question about it. Now, you take, you know, as you've indicated, sometimes positions that are at odds with important people in your own district maybe. Sometimes you take positions that no one's ever heard a Republican take before, like your positions on drugs, for example. Do you ever get in a visit from the GOP leadership? And I don't mean necessarily literally a knock on the door, but do they ever check in with you and ask what the heck's going on here?
So this is really interesting, because like in one of those articles, like the liberal bloggers, they always like, oh, I wonder what GOP leadership said to him. And no, they've been extraordinarily graceful and kind of accommodating. I think they've realized from early on that, you know, I was someone that was going to have an independent streak, and that they just need to find a way to work with me. So my relationship with GOP leaders, at least in the House, well, obviously, you know, when I'm taking vocal positions on the vaccine passport issue, accusing my colleagues of selling out constitutional liberty, you know, that ruffles some feathers. But we just adjourned legislative session and I was able to exchange hugs, you know, with the very few people I was arguing with a couple of weeks before. So I think those relationships are, at least they exist, where I do maintain or understand the priority of long-term relationships in terms of how that relates to governing. And if I do upset someone, you know, I try to smooth it over as best I can. Even an example of this is there was a Democrat on the House floor talking the other night about, you know, how great the CDC is. And I kind of lampooned him in a tweet. And then this guy sits just a couple seats down from me, and we ended up talking about it and reaching a gentleman's agreement later that night. So I think that's kind of the interesting thing that I'm trying to like gracefully stumble forward, where maybe I can put my foot in my mouth. Maybe I can misspeak or say things that didn't come out exactly correct. But then hopefully you're able to kind of just keep gliding with it and find a way to just tumble forward and patch things up as you go. So no, I feel that, yeah, at times relationships are stressed a little bit, but at present moment, I feel like, you know, the leaders have been relatively receptive and they recognize that I offer a perspective that is valuable, because the Republican Party, I think, truly is a party of diversity where people of different thinkings, different perspectives can come together and reach consensus on public policy that hopefully serves everyone.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank the official razor of the Tom Woods Show, and that is Harry's. You guys know I've been using Harry's for years. And then I grew a beard, but of course, I'm going to shave my neck because I'm a civilized human being. And the neck is a very sensitive area indeed. And Harry's always gives me a smooth, close, comfortable shave. When in various situations I have had to use the quote-unquote bargain brand, I have wound up a bloody mess, and it's awful and painful and grotesque. And yet Harry's is giving me this amazing experience at a low price, as low as $2 per refill. Their blades are designed to stay sharp. In a recent study, guys who shave 4 times a week said their 8th shave was as smooth as their first. Well, Harry's is giving their best offer to Tom Woods Show listeners. New Harry's customers can get a starter set at harrys.com/woods. You get a 5-blade razor, a weighted ergonomic handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel blade cover, a $13 value, all for just $3. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/woods to redeem your offer today. I have to say, what you just described to me about the Republican Party of Iowa's attitude toward you reminds me of a story I heard about Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul. Maybe you've heard this story. Everybody knew you couldn't twist Ron Paul's arm. There's no point. And so I forget who it was, but some federal schmuck said something like, and I appreciated this. He said, we have nothing to offer him that he would want. You know, so there was nothing that they could do to change his mind. So they just reconciled themselves to that. This guy has a mind that can't be changed. He's going to vote his conscience, and there's nothing we can do about that. So there was a time when, I don't know if it was the budget bill or something, that Gingrich said to a gathering of Republican congressmen, he said, listen, we are all going to vote for this bill. And then he paused and said, all right, except Ron Paul. Like, he actually had an exception in his mind because he knew that just was not going to happen. So, okay, look, everybody's going to vote this way except Shipley. And it kind of sounds to me like that.
There are definitely times when that's true. And certainly as I, you know, mature as a lawmaker, I think we'll see more of that it's been fun because when I do stir things up, like one of the things I check in with other members or leaders to just see kind of what the temperature is. And most people are kind of met with amusement where it's like, okay, this guy's doing something we've never seen before. This place is generally pretty boring, kind of dull. So I feel like I've been able to stick out positively and that I've been called a little bit of a wild card because some things, you know, I will stray and do things that are unexpected. But like certainly on that back the blue qualified immunity piece or other legislation, I think the leaders do know that, yeah, that Shipley's just not going to come along with us unless we totally offer universal school choice or some other, you know, conservative libertarian pipe dream, that those are my true goals. So.
When you're a state legislator in Iowa, there are certain issues you expect you're going to be debating and voting on. Then 2020 comes along and everything is thrown into chaos. So before the virus came along, what were the most contentious issues that you faced there as a state legislator?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So thinking back to early 2020, some of the things that were most difficult for me to sort through. In my community, industrial agriculture or animal husbandry, as what some people might know as confined animal feeding spaces, or what some people would call as factory farms, is a big issue. Actually, this morning I was attending a board of supervisors meeting where they were scoring a matrix for one of these animal husbandry operations. And I signed on to a very, well, what could easily be considered a very radical left-leaning bill relating to the restriction of these facilities. And so like that was an example of something, you know, that I was going back and forth in 2020, agriculture issues, certainly like pesticide drift. One thing that I've taken a staked out of position on is cellular infrastructure. This was an issue that actually helped get me elected. And so I remember thinking in March 2020, I had just, the first time I took to the House floor to really, you know, tear up a bill and file amendments on a bill that was a priority of my own party was actually related to cell towers and the uniform state rules that affect the siting of cell infrastructure. And I remember thinking to myself, like the first week of March 2020, when I, you know, first put on a half an hour show with my amendments, and I knew the people back home, you know, the 300 people that were all about this were really going to love it. And it was really going to give me a lot of political capital back home. I remember feeling very satisfied and thinking like, oh, my work is done. I don't have to do anything else for the legislative session because I was able to deliver on a very important issue. And then the pandemic happened and I was like, oh, actually there's a lot more work to do.
Yeah, indeed. Now, let me ask you, I know that ethanol subsidies are a federal issue, but is that also something that, is ethanol also an issue at the state level? And if so, how do you handle something where I guess everybody favors it?
Yeah, so we did have an ethanol discussion at the State House this year. The bill was relating to mandating blended fuels being dispensed at gas stations. So basically, the legislation would have required gas stations to offer an ethanol blended product, which a lot of states have moved in that direction. And I honestly just did my best to kind of dance around the issue and not really stake out a position one way or another, because for a lot of different reasons. And I guess this is where the philosophy and the practicality, well, first thing, the bill ended up dying. So that's the first thing to say. Other people were opposed to it. Even some farmers were opposed to it, because it would have really potentially been bad to, you know, gas and stations who might have been forced to make expensive upgrades to their equipment. But, you know, I had citizens who were non-farmers basically explaining to me that, you know, on an absolute levelized cost of energy basis, that ethanol actually is a more efficient fuel, and trying to tell me like what Brazil is doing. And so I kind of just danced around. Something I say like, okay, well, I don't care about blended fuel. If ethanol is really the direction to go, if ethanol is really a superior product than petroleum, then why don't we just have an E100 standard then and make that offering? And, you know, I kind of just throw kind of cute suggestions out like that to get people thinking. But basically, my approach was to host a legislative roundtable and just bring interested people to the table and just say, hey, what, you know, bring as many community members together, see what they say. And then I'm happy to kind of follow that guidance, because ethanol to me is maybe like a second or third tier issue compared to something like maybe the Second Amendment, pro-life, or certainly the medical freedom issues or education, which are definitely my top priorities. So, and especially because the Farm Bureau is so powerful and sometimes they do get some issues right, you still want to kind of maintain positive relationships. And so I wouldn't see any sort of benefit in terms of like, you know, tearing out my hair, talking about how awful these government subsidies and mandates are, because it's true. The other side just says, well, those apply in other energy sectors as well. And it's extraordinarily complicated, you know, how just the energy industry works. And it's not something I'm an expert in. But then just last thing I'll say through this approach is my state senator, who has a lot of experience and owns a trucking company, he was able to actually lead the opposition to the bill in the Senate. And so because he was a state senator and was taking a strong position, I was essentially able to just position myself behind his coattails and say, hey, you know, if it's good for my senator, it's good enough for me. And that's kind of how I maybe just sidestepped the issue and made sure I was focused on the things I really care about.
By the way, what part of Iowa do you represent?
So I represent Iowa House District 82, which is Southeast Iowa. I think I already mentioned Fairfield and Jefferson County, which for those who know, Iowa is about, you know, probably about an hour and 15-minute drive south of Iowa City.
Yeah,
and then my district.
I was trying to situate it in terms of something I knew, because I've been to Iowa City.
Yeah, so I'm about maybe an hour and a half. I should probably drive the speed limit more. But my district borders Missouri. So Van Buren and Davis County are on the Missouri border, and then about, you know, an hour west of the Mississippi River. So
do you have people in the legislature you feel like you, if it's not a caucus, that nevertheless you tend to vote with on a regular basis? Do you feel alone a lot in the legislature?
Well, so that was really, I think, what was the big test of this vaccine passport bill, was really just getting that test of, okay, how many people are truly with me? And I did have, I think, five total Republicans voting against the final passage of the vaccine passport bill. And it was really kind of a cool moment, because it hung in the air. On the House floor, you need 51 votes for anything to pass. That's the constitutional threshold for anything to pass, is 51 votes. And so sometimes you'll get a bill that hangs at 50, and, you know, they're waiting for those last few people to cast their votes. And in very rare occasions has a bill actually failed on the floor. But on the vaccine passport bill, because I was able to convince four other Republicans to vote nay with me, it hung at 50 for a long time. But by a long time, I mean 45 seconds or so, which feels like a long time when you're watching the board. And then they were able to corral another Republican member who, he had voted against it in committee for reasons not similar to mine. And then, of course, he voted affirmative, just because most legislators do whatever leadership tells them in the moment that they tell them. So yeah, that was a good acid test for me, that I had, you know, I had members supporting my amendments and I had members following my lead on the floor voting negative. And I feel like I am respected in my caucus. And I think this is the big thing we all need to learn, except for you, Tom, but making sure we're articulating our ideas in a way that we're earning the respect of our fellow citizens, or in my case, my fellow legislators, that even if someone doesn't agree with my position, they can at least, you know, cognize that, say, hey, he's making some points that he feels very passionate about. And while I might not vote his way, I respect his point of view, and making sure that we're always communicating ourselves in a very dignified way that will yield sympathy from people who might see things differently.
You have a website, peaceloveiowa.com. That doesn't sound like the typical Republican website. What would people find there?
Well, so it's still kind of under construction. I'm a little bit of a digital neophyte, but we have some published newsletters that we've put on there. And I think right now there's two petitions. One is to change what we call the medical freedom petition relating to the emergency vaccination laws that are still on the books that are very troubling. And then we have another petition for the Second Amendment Preservation Act, which is, again, a 10th Amendment style bill to stand up against any sort of gun control the Biden administration is planning. And then, yeah, so my newsletter, you got some petitions we can sign. If you want to support our work, you can offer a generous donation on the link there. And then, but yeah, I think the newsletters are pretty interesting. So if you want to check out the blog or sign up or just interface with us, send us an email. You know, we'd love to have you or anyone just contribute and be a part of these conversations.
All right, excellent. Well, I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/1904. I'll put your Twitter up there at JeffShipley77. And I assume that suffices for links?
Yeah, and then we have a Facebook page too, facebook.com/peaceloveiowa. I probably do my more serious political work on Facebook, and then we obviously take a little bit more liberty and stylistic artistic creativity on our Twitter. And then, yeah, we have an email list, and hopefully I can be as more of a prolific email generator like some of our other libertarian colleagues. But yeah, we definitely need as much help as we can get in support, encouragement, and just constructive feedback, because I realize, you know, I'm a younger guy. I still got a lot to learn, especially, you know, biting off so much sometimes. You know, being able to bite off something that you can chew it around rather than just choke on it. So sometimes we need help chewing on these things.
Well, I encourage people to do that. And I can say, as I said, I've known you for quite a while, and you were a stalwart for Ron Paul in Iowa. In fact, he did so well that there was a brief time, you'll remember this, when the Republican Party of Iowa was actually run by Ron Paul people, like A.J. Spiker and David and some others.
Well, so we took over. It was the State Central Committee, and those elections were held prior to the 2012 convention. And yes, I was actually able to be part of that. I was able to cast my vote for A.J. Spiker as chairman as a member of that State Central Committee. And yes, we were able to take over the organs of the state Republican Party. And I know at the very least, they took advantage of that to invite you out for an event in Dubuque at one point in time.
Yeah.
And so basically, you know, what libertarians are trying to do for libertarian parties across the state, we were able to accomplish that for the state Republican Party. And it was a very interesting political science experiment that I think did contribute to at least the success I'm currently experiencing. So for all those who were able to be a part of the Iowa campaign and make that possible, hopefully we can do it again up here coming up shortly.
I remember they invited me to give 3 lectures up there. And so I did that. I mean, I talked about the crisis of 2008, the financial crisis. I talked about, I don't remember what the other one was, but I talked about foreign policy. So I might have also talked about nullification. I mean, really hardcore things. And I talked about non-interventionist foreign policy. That was an amazing thing for a state Republican Party to invite me to do that. So yeah,
let me clarify something too. Let me clarify your memory, because I believe you came out to the 2010 Republican state convention when nullification had just been published.
That's right. I did. You're right. I forgot about that.
And that was prior to us taking over the party. We had only had a handful of state central committee seats at that point. But even just by having a non-majority on the state governing board, that still gave us the license essentially to invite speakers like yourself. So even though you might not have a governing majority on the state party board, there still are perks that could be derived from that.
Yeah, I remember thinking to myself how incredible it was that I was speaking to basically a mainstream GOP audience and telling them about nullification, and everybody loved it. I mean, they could not have been more enthusiastic. It was an incredible thing. So you got something interesting going on up there in Iowa, I'll put it that way.
Well, you have a lot of interesting ideas yourself. So, I mean, don't give us too much credit, Tom. I think you deserve a lot of...
Well, that's true, but something tells me that if the New York Republican Party invited me, it would be a cold day you know where. So,
well, there's only one way to find out, right?
Yeah, that's true. Well, listen, thanks, Jeff, for chatting with me and for the good work you're doing. And I'll send people over to peaceloveiowa.com to give you some support. And best of luck.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm sorry we didn't get to talk more about the constitutional issues in the vaccine passport bill, but I know your listeners are very much following the medical freedom issues. And you know, with God's grace and everyone asserting their God-given liberty to the greatest extent possible, I know that we have great things and we will be leaders of the free world. And certainly, you know, I guess I want to apologize, Tom, to you because you've given so much prolific free material over the years. And I probably haven't donated or supported you financially as much as I probably should have, given how helpful you've been. And I want to make sure that you've accumulated financial success because I view your contributions as just so immense. So I just want to throw that out there.
Very kind of you to say, Jeff. I think you've repaid me already by being a courageous person who speaks out in support of issues that matter. So let's call it even. But I appreciate your kind words very much. Thanks so much.
All right. We'll talk to you later, Tom. Appreciate the chance.
All right, folks. Something interesting tomorrow on the show. We got Michael Malice back on this program. And those of you who have been listening for a long time know he is a very regular guest. And we have a, I don't know how to put it really, an interesting relationship together, put it that way. And he has had some tremendous publishing success over the past week or so that almost defies explanation. And that's not a put down of Michael. It defies explanation what has just happened to him, that for several days, Michael Malice had the top selling nonfiction book on all of Amazon. So I want to talk to him about that. And of course, he is going to be joining me at my 2000th episode event. And if you haven't signed up to attend that yet, it doesn't cost you a thing to get in, then I'm urging you to do so now because you know it's going to be a blast. And Michael tells me he's got something lined up that is going to blow everybody away, but he will not reveal ahead of time what it is. TomWoods2000.com is the website to go sign up for that. So go do that, and I'll see you tomorrow when my guest will be Michael Malice himself.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.